Welcome to the March 31st, 2020 work session of the Washington County Board of Commissioners. And since we have some members in physical attendance and some participating over the telephone, I've asked our recorder, Kathy Jacoby, to please call the roll.
Okay, seated at the table, we have Jerry Linder, Alan Rapplier, and Steve Rhodes, Chair Harrington, Commissioner Scouten, and Commissioner Willie. On the phone, we have Commissioner Treese
and Commissioner here.
Commissioner Rogers, are you on?
Here. Yep, I'm here.
Great. And the first item on the agenda is board and leadership communication. Who would like to go first? How about on the phone first? Pam, do you have anything you'd like to share?
Certainly. Thank you for being there, and I'm sorry I'm not with you this morning. I do want to share that tomorrow night we are having our second Zoom meeting for the Get Moving 2020 group. The purpose of the meeting tomorrow night is to gain information from other bond measures that have passed, to learn about oversight committees, and to just have panelist discussions about what the experience is like so that our task force is best prepared to understand what the next steps into the future will be. We will also be setting the stage for an understanding, as I mentioned at our meeting last week, that it may not be referred at the end of May, and that's just referred. We have up until August to refer, but we are taking prudent steps to make sure that we are aware of what our economic conditions are and making the best judgments possible as we move forward. So that's my report, along with the fact that I've been working very hard every day with the team that is looking at the response to our emergency economic situation. So thank you.
You want me to go next?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Great, thank you. I just since we've seen each other last, or at least from last Tuesday, been dealing, thank you, Chris Deffenbeck, for her work as well, with the tolling issues in regard to 205 and how we might approach that. It's been a good deal of time in a telephone conversation on how that's all going to look and play out. And I had a corresponding call much on the same issue about the ACT meeting. We've canceled that due to the RIE virus, and decided that trying to do it with, you know, about 20 people plus staff is not going to work on the phone. So we're going to defer that until June. So that's the update on that. We have a meeting tomorrow on, and Pam, you probably have gotten the notice as well in regard to our normal monthly meeting at Work Systems. That's all going to be telephonic, again, due to the issues that we have. I will be there this afternoon. I got some message that they might have some issues there in terms of folks not feeling well, so I'm being very protective.
No issues here that I know of. Is there something I need to know about?
Pam, you sent out a note. Did you want to say that publicly or what?
I'm fine with saying that our situation in our household is that one of the members of our household has had contact once removed with somebody that has the virus now. So I'm just trying to protect the safety and my concern for others. That's why I'm here. But I am in contact with everybody all the time.
We all have a right, irrespective of any exposure or not, to follow telework. So there's the Board of Commissioners is fully enabled to have all five of us calling in from home. We don't have a requirement to have any of us be physically in the room. So it may vary from week to week.
I would also add, for those who got a message from Bill Gaffey, and you all remember Bill, they're kind of staying close to home. Apparently, his wife's workout exercise buddy is been in contact with somebody who has COVID, and they got it from somebody, an employee at the gym. So he's okay, she's okay. They're not having any issues, but he's just let me know that and saying hello.
Okay. This is County Commissioner Dick Scouten. Not too much to report. There's a second meeting of special meeting, I guess, of the Regional Disaster Preparedness Organization that starts at 6. So I can catch the first part of that on Zoom, I think it is. But obviously, that would conflict with our board meeting at 6:30. So I'm going to touch with the staff and see if Mr. Walker or someone else will be able to cover that meeting on my behalf or the county's behalf. That conflict will only come up on fourth Tuesdays, but I think the plan is for the Regional Disaster Preparedness Organization's policy group to meet every Tuesday at telephonically or by Zoom at 6 o'clock. Shouldn't be a problem except on these fourth Tuesdays, so I'll follow up with staff on that one. Other than that, not too much to report. I don't know anyone that, fortunately, that has the virus at this point. Now maybe Pam Treese is, hopefully that's not the case, Pam, Commissioner Treese. But I, that aside, I don't, I'm thankfully we're all safe and no one I know has been in contact up to this point. So I hope that we can, I'd like to continue to come at least once a week to the county public service building for the board meetings, but we'll do whatever, you know, circumstances require. So it's good to know we have good backup. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I was pleased to be able to visit the EOC last week with Marnie. Thank you, Marnie, wherever you are, for orchestrating that. It was very helpful for me to see, I think, how that our Emergency Operations Center functions and how it is handling the social distancing as well as the myriad of different problems. So it was very educational and interesting for me. So if you haven't done that, I would encourage you to reach out to Marnie and see about that. Of course, there is a toll that you have to take cookies or donuts or something like that. So we complied with that. I may even try my hand with some chocolate chip cookies over the weekend, but I have to taste those first. I don't know how good of a cook I am. I'm also working with another organization, not county related, Hillsborough Community Foundation, because they have received $100,000 from Intel to be distributed to families in need. And so we have met, identified what the priorities of where that money should go. The Community Foundation can't deliver checks specifically to individual families, so we have to reach out and partner up with other organizations such as Virginia Garcia and possibly some others. So we identified for those at today at, as a matter of fact, as we speak, I think at 11 o'clock, they are having a executive board meeting to figure out who they're going to choose and how that's going to be distributed. But it's interesting that there are other organizations and private sector that have indicated that they would like to throw some matching funds in there. So we're hoping that that fund will double or triple and be put to use with our families that are obviously struggling with either healthcare needs or rent or food or whatever it is. So I'll find out more about that later today. That was really interesting. And then, you know, so, as we go through this period of time in our life where this is totally new and every day is a new day. I went to Costco this last weekend and bought patio furniture. And because we've been wanting some patio furniture, so they come in gymungus big boxes, of course, so I get them all home, load them into the garage, and I'm looking at them, and down at the bottom it says, made in China. And I think, okay, that's probably gonna require some special handling, so now I've gotten information of I have to go out and I have to sanitize the boxes, and when I put the furniture together, I'll have to have gloves on and sanitize that. So it's just a whole different mindset of what I thought. You know, this assembly stuff is challenging as it is, and then you put all the sanitation in on top of that. It's very different. So anyway, we're definitely in different times, but I think we're doing, as a commission, I think we're doing a good job of handling that. So, and the staff especially, thank you.
And of course, now it's kind of gotten reversed. They are at the getting on the backside of the bell curve and are very concerned about getting stuff from us because we're now the epicenter for all this. And yeah.
Okay, I'll go next. I have to say, I've never been on as many conference calls as I have been on over the last week or two. And a lot of communication with other elected officials all throughout our region and our state to ensure that folks know that our Washington County Emergency Operations staff is really working hard to make sure that we are responding to this crisis and how we're going about it and communicating. I've never recorded so many public service announcements in the course of 2 weeks before. It's just been a very unique experience, but I'll say a very positive one at the same time. I'm really proud of how we as commissioners have been provided with really top-notch public health-informed information so that we can go about our decision-making having the benefit of that. And we're trying to practice the art of the possible in terms of meeting our community needs. We'll be hearing from our government relations folks. Part of what we've had the opportunity to come up to speed on is not only the federal response with the multiple economic COVID response funding packages, and Senator Merkley particularly is having a round of conference calls with elected officials and business leaders and community leaders throughout Oregon so that everyone has the opportunity of knowing, especially with this third piece of legislation that uses the acronym CARES, how it is really targeted at small business owners as well as employees to make sure that people can get paychecks, that grants and loans are available. This morning when I came into the office and I was talking with Janet at our front desk, I was asking her what her experience has been like over the last week. And she shared that she's been fielding many different phone calls from folks looking for information, either as employees or as small businesses. So I made sure to get her the information from Senator Merkley so that she's able to pass that information on as yet another communication channel that we have for serving our public. While I can appreciate at the state level, the State Joint Committee on the COVID-19 response, as we'll hear from government relations staff, has put together a whole list of concepts for how the state may provide some critical resources into play for our community. I continue to be very concerned about the fact that there is unmet or incomplete business from the abrupt nature of the short session, particularly our $25 million liability for community corrections. So I look forward to our learning more, particularly I believe in our work session next Tuesday, we'll be getting a financial forecast. So I think we're going to need to consciously understand that liability as we move forward as well. Bottom line, we're all in this together in a big way. One thing that I have internalized as a result of participating in multiple conference calls with our public health our Health and Human Services Director, Marnie Kyle, is the message around this virus and our community spread and the fact that we need data from 3 incubation cycles, and we've gone through 1 complete cycle already. We're in the middle of the second one, and so we've got really 3 more weeks of data to collect to see how this virus is living in our community so that we can then take a look at how we respond for the weeks ahead of that, which all challenges me to be patient. I just don't want to sit around for another 3+ weeks. But that's what we've got to do so that we can learn more. But I'm glad that we do have some normal business that we need to take care of along the way. So hopefully the number of conference calls just for getting information and understanding the response will slow down a little bit so that we can get some of our committees working again in the future weeks. I look forward to that anyway. So that's it from me.
We'll have to be patient because, I think we all have heard about the state of Virginia is pushing their stay home rules until the end of June or something like that. We're going to have to be careful not to do this prematurely. We want to do this right and be very, yep, very careful about how we start to lift things as well, so we don't get a second bell curve of cases, uptick cases.
We are anticipating that there will be at least 2 cycles of flare-ups along the way, but we can't put any further plans in place for how services might be restored without having better data. So I love data. I like making decisions informed by data.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking the bell curve. We don't want the uptick to be right on the heels of the first uptick. I mean, we could probably anticipate another uptick, but hopefully much later into the year or next year.
Yep.
If at all.
Yep. So leadership communications.
Just a couple of items. Just to alert the board on constituent communications right now, in order to facilitate our working situation, we're grouping those and we will weekly send out a batch to the board rather than as we've been doing in the past, more quickly on those. So expect, I think on Thursdays, we'll have a email out with the constituent information that we've received. The other one.
Steve, just a quick question. Could you give us a little bit of a, is there a common theme in these inquiries?
I have to say I'm not aware of that, but they are mostly related to COVID.
Okay, so that's the total focus, and that's probably a good thing. They're not, we're not still dealing with a whole bunch of other kinds of issues while trying to deal with COVID.
Not that I'm aware of right now, it's
all right,
COVID. And then I know we're behind the curve on this, but we are, our ITS folks are rapidly working on getting us a platform to use for our meetings. And I'm going to venture, I shouldn't venture, but I will, that we're probably going to go to Zoom. We've been impressed with what Clackamas County does. If all of you took a look at their meeting, it was fantastic the way they managed that, I thought. So we're working on that, hoping to have that up and running. Keep our fingers crossed whether it's next week or the week after, but we will get us on a platform that works for the public as well as for the staff and the board. So we hope to have that soon. And then the final thing, which you probably noticed from a calendar that notice it came out, was that the CAO interviews. Remember, we picked 2 different dates. We have May 28 and 29. Those are good. We picked a later date in June. Those did not work. So I'm going to contact each of you, but I'm trying to shop June 18 and 19 instead. So and once we've got those tied down, then we will notify the candidates of those dates and ask them to reserve them. And maybe we'll get the May dates, and maybe it'll be June.
Thank you. So a little bit of good news. We've finally got the case of Wilsonville versus Washington County, a land use appeal over a contractor's establishment dismissed. We've worked on that for months, trying to get that settlement put together, and it finally worked out. And so that's gone. And tomorrow, actually, Jack, it would be at Luba, an oral argument. It's going to be a remote one. And we have been working remotely and trying to assist the CEO's office. Brad, my office, has been a trooper, been here most days, I think. So we've been trying to keep the lights on and keep up with our legal advice. We do have three EOC volunteers that are working, which is, happy to say, Marissa, one of our legal specialists, and Jackie and Courtney are both going to take their stints at the EOC. And on a personal note, it's day 9 for the quarantine for my son, who his OSU program overseas got canceled. So all's healthy, and so he's going a little stir crazy, but we're doing okay. So.
Good morning. Diane is home today, just a little bit of a head cold, but I think she's fine, but she asked us to sit in here. So I wanted to highlight a couple things. The public hearing that we have scheduled for this evening, we're going to ask that to be opened and continued. It's for a local improvement district, and it's not very reasonable to expect anyone to want to attend that this evening. So we're going to ask for it to be continued to a date certain when hopefully at the end of May we can have public coming to testify to that. Also want to mention the Emergency Operations Center with Clean Water Services. The team is just miraculously working through things to make sure we continue to deliver services to our ratepayers and the public to keep the public safe and the environment healthy, and also working hard to make sure our employees are safe and healthy. So it's a big job, but people are making amazing progress and coming up with ideas. Everything from social distancing to our lab is making hand sanitizer for all employees because it's so difficult to get on the market, and we want to make sure that we're not taking it from someone else who isn't able to make it like our lab is, so that's exciting. And then the last thing I want to mention, just some good news that we got yesterday. We were participating in a class action suit. There's a chemical that we purchased for the treatment plants, and there was an allegation that there'd been some price fixing among the manufacturers in that area, the vendors. And so we collected all our information and all our data and submitted it thinking, well, you know, you're sometimes lucky that you get a, you know, free movie on Netflix for these class actions. So we balanced the desire to at least see if we might qualify. And we got a check yesterday for $102,000.
All right.
So I think between finance and legal and the effort it took and the treatment plant to pull the data together, well worth it.
Great. Well, I think that's it for board and leadership communication at this time. Are there any questions regarding the formal agenda for this evening's meeting?
I have one.
Go ahead, Commissioner Rogers.
On item C, and I don't have a problem with the action as much as I have a question. I know, Dick, you know this as well. We've always looked to see on these pieces if there isn't some need for a trail or sidewalk that would connect various parts of a community. And I'm not really familiar with that community, but it looks like if someone were to be biking or walking, they'd have to go quite a ways out of distance just to get around the block. Is there no need for that? I know it's a petition by the folks who live there that they'd like to surrender it, but is there no public benefit to it? That's my question.
So this item on the consent agenda, I've asked that it be pulled from the consent agenda, not pulled entirely off of the meeting, but pulled off the consent agenda to the action item so that we can hear from our staff about this. So to answer your question right now, Commissioner Rogers, we do have Mr. Roberts, I'm getting my Steves mixed up now, to answer your question, but we'll also go over this in tonight's meeting as well.
If possible, it'd be nice to have just a little bit of explanation now so we don't just get it fresh tonight.
Yes, he's about to give that.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, so the easement action, or the vacation that's been requested was a temporary vehicle access, or a temporary emergency vehicle access easement. So it was never intended as a pedestrian access, just for a temporary emergency vehicle access. It really should have been vacated back in 2015 or so, at the time that the subdivision developed, and it was an oversight, I think, on the part of the developer. So they've actually sold the adjacent property, so there's a homeowner now that has this residual temporary vehicle access easement that occupies most of their front yard. So the owner of both the residential property and a vacant commercial property requested the vacation of that easement. Like I said, it was really an oversight from a few years ago. One thing that we did identify in there is that it would have been ideal to secure an additional pedestrian connection somewhere in that area, but we don't believe this provides the opportunity to do that.
I appreciate Commissioner Rogers bringing this up, but I'm going to guess, looking at County Council, that easement is a property right, and but it's defined and limited by the nature of whatever has been given up as a property right. In this case, I don't think we have any property rights to provide pedestrian access. So even if we didn't vacate it, we wouldn't really have that ability to do in any case. Am I correct?
Commissioner Gowen, you're absolutely right. The term easement is limited by its language and its terms. And so if the easement says only for emergency vehicle access, we couldn't expand that without some compensation.
So the constituent email thread that Commissioner Treese and I have been on this item seems to indicate that there may be or not some holes with regard to ensuring that there is a, well, let me back up. It would be helpful, Mr. Roberts, mm-hmm. if you could help us all understand the current state of affairs as development applications come in for neighborhoods. Who is looking out for active transportation access along the way? And mm-hmm. is that taken care of or not? And was, in this specific case, was that taken mm-hmm. care of, or was there some what's the word I'm looking for?
Oversight.
Oversight, yeah. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to probably summarize what happened here. One of the challenges that we face, we do have in our development code, we have some requirements around ensuring good vehicular and pedestrian connectivity for our streets. So in most cases, we would look to try to have on a road like Shackelford Road, every 530 feet or so, we would like to either have an intersecting roadway, which has sidewalks, or in some cases, perhaps just a pedestrian only or pedestrian and bicycle access. And again, that's just to help ensure that there are multiple points of access from a residential neighborhood out to a major roadway. And development happens very much in an incremental fashion. This is a location where there was actually a series of three different subdivision approvals over time between the nearest two cross streets. In one of those developments, we did secure a pedestrian access. It would have been ideal in hindsight to have secured an additional pedestrian access somewhere in this vicinity, and in the course of the approvals of the different subdivisions, that was not achieved here. And so both my predecessor and I continue to stress the importance of ensuring that we're adhering to those requirements for good bike and pedestrian access. This is a location where, again, in hindsight, had things been handled, to the best of our ability, I think we probably could have gotten one. One of the challenges here, too, again, with the sort of piecemeal incremental nature of development, in order to secure a pedestrian access here, it would have actually required the developer to lose an entire buildable lot. So there's a pretty substantial financial implication that would have come into play there as well.
But there's also, now and forever, right. a community
right.
Loss as well.
Correct,
so
right.
I don't have that much patience for the explanation right. of the one-time financial hit right. for the developer. Yeah. What concerns me is this isn't the first time an oversight has happened like this. I would like to know it's going to be the last time. What I really want to know is what procedural process failed and how is it going to be fixed so that our community no longer suffers the consequences of an oversight.
Right.
Lives are at stake.
I was going to ask Mr. Back to join us. So I think, again, it's a complicated process, but we have implemented an internal working policy that sort of addresses the importance of good bike and pedestrian connectivity. That happened in about 2017, I believe. And so I think 98% of the time we do a really good job. This, unfortunately, is one of those rare opportunities where I think we, you know, honestly just missed an opportunity here.
Can I follow up with one more question? I'm hearing a pause, so I will. Thanks for the explanation, and Commissioner Scouten, I appreciate you kind of leading with a legal description. Had we done all of this correct, and again, I was just curious. I didn't know that others had picked up on it, but I should have known. Had we done that, there would have been a loss of a lot, which is expensive, but is there no way with an easement, and again, I'm not the legal folks, you are, that we could procure the interest of putting a path or something through on this site? I mean, I don't know how much we're talking in money, or is that something you have to condemn? I don't know what the ramifications are, and if this is not the right spot, I guess where is?
Right. So we typically require these to be separate dedicated tracks and not an easement on a property. That seems to be a cleaner way to address these. We have a number of them in the past that were done as easements, and those are a little bit more difficult to ensure that people don't build something over it because it's private property, where if we secure it as a tract, it's a more obvious defined thing, and it's very clear to our staff we can't issue building permits to build something in that area. So again, I think our process, like I said, it really does work the vast majority of the time. I think, you know, this again, I think the complication of multiple development approvals that occurred over time made it somewhat difficult to sort of anticipate what the ultimate build out was going to look like. We don't have a perfect map, but we do a very good job, I think, generally of ensuring that as we're reviewing each development application, that we're trying to ensure that we meet both those spacing requirements for streets and pedestrian connections. And there's also a block perimeter standard. So we're trying to ensure that we don't create big super blocks where a pedestrian can't pass through there. And like I said, you know, clearly here we would have, in hindsight, done something different. And certainly it's a good lesson learned. And as I shared with you, Chair, this is just another good reminder for us to point out to the staff. Obviously, this is something that happened now 6-7 years ago. But, you know, we definitely want to take advantage of the opportunity just to remind folks that this was an opportunity here that we won't have the chance to really go back and address. So we want to try to make sure that we get it right the first time.
Just a couple of follow-up comments. Yeah, I think dedicated with clear county ownership and responsibility for maintenance, I think is important too. In the past, we set up easements, but with no clear lines of responsibility about who's supposed to maintain over time. And sometimes in earlier years, we used to create very narrow easements,
right,
and they would feel very unsafe. Mm-hmm. Trees would crowd over them. Right. They get to be very dark and kind of scary, mm-hmm, twisty, funky little easements connecting cul-de-sacs, and the nearby property owners felt that they weren't safe. It wasn't clear who was supposed to be responsible for maintaining and sweeping pine needles and leaves and things like that. And so all those things, hopefully, we going forward in recent times, we're avoiding. And it's important that we have a clear understanding of whose responsibility. And by taking full ownership, fee simple, absolute, whatever, is much better than just simply the bare easement possessory interest.
So we do not take ownership of these. They're typically set aside as a tract that's owned by a homeowners association in most cases that has the ownership and ongoing maintenance responsibility. That's been very helpful, as you said, in terms of ensuring that there's adequate maintenance performed on these, but we in the past have, you know, we've just not been staffed and had the maintenance capabilities to address all of these. So we continue to rely on private owners to do that, but it's typically an ownership association as opposed to an individual, and we've had much better success with that model.
I'd like to take the, I think the guy should take a look at the possibility of actually taking on ownership and responsibility for some of these. And there's new tools and equipment that can allow sweeping and things like that that didn't used to exist.
And may need to qualify for URMD funding.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to add briefly, both Mr. Roberts and I looked at the situation and in retrospect kind of scratched our head and wondered why it wasn't required. But I do want to note that the actual decision was a type 3 decision before a hearings officer who had to weigh all the standards and information at the time. And I can't guess the specifics. I did go back and look at the staff report for the particular case, but there was probably more in there than in testimony than I saw in the staff report on how this ended up this way, but it ultimately was a hearings officer's determination not to require it.
Yeah, I'd like to see that there be a review of situations like this. It's not the first time that a hearings officer made a decision to not include bike and pedestrian connectivity in a development application, because after all, the hearings officer makes decisions on what is the code, what does the law allow, as opposed to what is best for the community over the course of time. So I think that tells us that in urban unincorporated Washington County, we need to do a better job with clarifying our code and why it's there for community development. I do appreciate that you mentioned Mr. Roberts, that efforts been made through the 2017 process and forward to make sure that there are better community results. What I've had the opportunity to learn in this particular case through the mail thread that we had going on from the constituent communication, and as you highlighted here, this particular instance of the multiple developments happened earlier than 2017, seven years ago. This just underscores how important it is that you and your organization have worked on these processes so that we can achieve a better community result. So I do appreciate that work is in place now. Thank you for highlighting it. And onward, ho we go together, building a better community for all.
Thank you.
Also for today's agenda, we have an added item on the consent agenda. Under support services, there is an item G, accept bid and award a contract for Adams Crossing first floor tenant improvement. We moved on to questions on the formal agenda.
I have one question.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
I am having trouble finding the board agenda online. When I click on it, it shows the work session agenda for both the work session and the board. If I'm making an error, would somebody just send me an email and let me know or send me the link?
I don't know. It worked yesterday. I think Kathy Jacoby has something to share.
Yes, we'll communicate that with upstairs administration and get you all set, okay?
Yes, thank you.
I also neglected to highlight that we have an added agenda item 2.5, COVID-19 update that we'll do on camera. And then... Under proclamations, I thought there are two proclamations. I thought for the first one, the Fair Housing Month in Washington County, we'd have a recorder read that proclamation into the record. And the second one, Commissioner Treese, as you are our representative to the Community Development, the Policy Advisory Committee, the PAB or board, the second proclamation deals with the work for the Community Development Week. Would you be willing to read that?
Absolutely, and thank you.
Okie dokie. Any other questions on today's formal agenda for this, tonight's meeting? And I understand we'll be using YouTube. Okay. Well, without further ado, sorry through all that discussion, we're a little bit behind, so we'll move on to our next agenda topic, legislative update. So if our government relations team would come up and we'll turn the mics over to you.
Good morning. For the record, for anyone that's listening in, Paige Spence here for government relations, joined by Aaron Doyle. Glad to see and hear everyone healthy today. Your government relations team is here specifically to provide updates on COVID-19. We recognize that under normal circumstances, we would have already given you a more comprehensive session wrap from the 2020 short session. We will be providing that to you in the coming days. Our focus over the past couple weeks has been on COVID-19 and the county's urgent needs. As you are all well aware, Washington County's first case was diagnosed on February 28th, and those of us who went to the NACO conference returned on March 3rd. Since our return from DC, we have really been focused on the county's needs in light of this public health crisis. Principally, we've been in close contact with the department heads in our respective portfolios, as well as with Steve Rhodes and County Council, to assure that county needs most urgent and into the future are being met. Things are moving very quickly. You may have questions today that we cannot answer. There is a lot of uncertainty, which makes us all uncomfortable, me included. But any answers that we cannot provide today, we will seek to answer for you as soon as we can. We are in constant contact with our partners at the federal lobby firm Vance Goyack Associates, as well as with our associations and other counties. So you are aware, we will be providing you with a weekly memo regarding COVID-19 and the county's needs. You should have our first memo in front of you today. And also, one or more of us will be speaking with you briefly each work session until a time to be determined. You can always also give us a call or email. We're happy to have one-on-ones with you separately as needed if there are issues that you want to dive more deeply into. But today, we're going to just give you a few high-level updates. But again, I want to stress that we are available anytime to talk with you individually. So at the federal level, Congress has passed three bills that have been signed into law. The first provided assistance, as you all know, to the healthcare response to the crisis. The second bill was the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, which focused on aid for families and workers affected by the crisis and expanded testing. And then the third bill, which Chair Harrington referenced earlier today, was the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, otherwise known as the CARES Act, which provided a package of over $2 trillion in stimulus dollars to help combat the health crisis and send economic relief to workers and businesses affected by restrictions that are intended to stop the outbreak's spread. We will continue to work with our federal lobby team at Vance Goyack Associates to assure that the county's needs are met and that we can take advantage of opportunities to gather our needed resources. And on the federal side of our work will be included in our weekly updates to you. At the state level, as your lobbyists, we wish we had all of the answers, but process-wise is still a bit unclear. We are expecting a first of potentially multiple special sessions to be called any day now. There are multiple bill drafts that are circulating, but there are still some negotiations and some drafting to happen. So as soon as we have a specific date and package of what we expect, we will be alerting you. So for now, I want to, each of us want to talk with you about a couple of specific issues within our portfolios that we are tracking closely. So for me, I'm focusing a lot on homelessness and housing. For homelessness, County Council has raised an issue around periodic tenancy So this would be a situation if there is an individual who is staying in a hotel or motel with a voucher or is staying in a shelter in a single bed for a long period of time. That could end up constituting a tenancy under landlord-tenant law, which is not going to, you know, be the most helpful as we move forward. So we'll be looking into that issue. And then you may recall that in the short session, there was House Bill 4001, which was part of Speaker Kotek's homelessness package. And the legislature contemplated in that bill a component to supersede local zoning to allow for development of shelters in most lands. And during session, your GR team worked through a group of stakeholders to place some sideboards on that siting and compliance with other rules regarding health and safety requirements. And that shelter siting flexibility reflecting House Bill 4001 negotiations is included in drafted legislation for consideration in the emergency session. And as drafted, these provisions would have a sunset of July 1, 2021. And then the additional focus for homelessness right now is shelter capacity, both for those who are healthy and those who have either been diagnosed with the COVID-19 virus or are showing symptoms. With respect to housing, very grateful for the chair's leadership with the other two Tri-County Metro chairs who sent a letter to the governor urging a moratorium on evictions, and that the governor now has put that through an executive order. So the next steps are looking at rent assistance, mortgage payment assistance, and commercial evictions, including county properties. As you all know, Washington County Housing Authority does actually own properties, so our ability to pay our mortgages and other expenses will be impacted as well if folks are not able to pay rents. There are also a couple of regulatory fixes to the Community Development Block Grant Program that I'm focusing on and will be sending a letter to our federal delegation around, and then with HHS, we're looking at the need for protective personal equipment or PPE and ensuring that Oregon is going to be getting our allotment to keep our communities safe. And then also looking at the services that our county already provides to our most vulnerable, such as transportation and meal services for the elderly and disabled, and then also disability services. So just making sure that there are alternative mechanisms of providing these services and adequate funding to do so. And then I would be remiss if I didn't give a huge shout out to Marnie and her team and everyone who's working at the Emergency Operations Center. We're in very close communications, and I know that things are changing rapidly, but they're doing a fantastic job. Thank you. I'll turn it over to Erin.
Good morning. For those who can't see me, Erin Doyle. I am going to cover both Jajit's portfolio and my own, given that Jajit has been out on personal leave. I know that he is back and paying attention. He is watching or listening via the YouTube if it's working right now. We've been working with... we've been working with the County Council's office as well to kind of compile the list of needs of the regulatory structures that the state has placed on counties in performing our normal duties as a governmental agency, and trying to work those some solutions into the legislative concepts. We have been successful on some, but unfortunately not all, but we think we've found local workarounds for those things that we couldn't. The memo that was referenced by Paige was sent out to you via email this morning, so I won't go into all of the details, but I wanted to kind of hit a couple of highlights related to the public meetings issues. As everyone is adopting new technology, we're making sure that we're abiding by the public meetings laws that are in place and the ability to provide that type of constituent engagement. So right now, a lot of the focus has been on making sure we're not running afoul of public meetings law if only written communication is provided, but we are also engaging in how we can work using technology and telephonic and any other, if we use a Zoom platform or Teams platform, to not be platform biased, figuring out how we can coordinate all of that so that public meetings can still run as smoothly as they normally do, but the constituents can participate as we work through a new reality for the next few months. Also very importantly and at top of mind, also based on Chair Harrington's comments about the budget and the ramifications of this cost that we're undertaking and the 2020 session's failings, We are looking at how to make that budget process flexible. There is currently language in legislation that has been drafted for the emergency session related to COVID that would allow for a much more flexible budgetary process as far as how we interact with the public on that, but also the ability to spend money and set your budget as your availability dictates. So flexible deadline there is it's code for that, just to make sure that the process can be followed, but that you don't lose the ability to spend money as you're trying to react to everything we're trying to react to, and maintain the county into the next fiscal year. So those are the two big highlights there. One other thing to be aware of is transient lodging taxes. They are creating a flexibility within the legislation to allow us to use that specifically for COVID response. And I don't have the language in my head yet, but I'm gonna look at that to see how long that authority would last. But basically it's taking us out of those required percentages that have to be spent on tourism purposes so that we can respond to COVID. I would imagine that the partnership that we have to have with the Travel Association would want to look at preserving those businesses that normally gain from the tourism that have been very hard hit in this economic crisis. So those are the big things from Jijit's portfolio that I wanted to provide you information on. From my portfolio, there is a ton of economic development protection going on in a lot of different instances. Not every business will be covered by every program that's been put in place at the federal or state level. And we are working to make sure with our local government partners, with ourselves, with our EOC response team, that we are providing as much information as we can, but making sure that our resources can help those that can't receive the help from other programs that exist. So just kind of wrapping my head around what the feds have provided and the processes and the delays that are coming with that. There was some information about the Small Business Association being a touch overwhelmed right now and not being able to respond quickly to requests, and then being given like 14 different things that they have to oversee. So that's one huge part of it. I think that the state will be reacting. What we also are going to be working on with our federal partners is making sure that these types of emergency responses that we do at the local level will be reimbursable, but you'll hear more about that. I'm totally stealing someone's thunder right now, and that's totally inappropriate. But the other piece of it is making sure that employees have the resources that they need and finding a way to make sure we're supportive of those legislative efforts moving forward so that our community members both stay in their homes. Their businesses not being evicted is another key component. So that way, once we lift the orders to stay home to save lives, we have places to go and businesses to spend our money at. So at this point, I'm happy to take any questions moving forward, as is Paige. And then any questions, as she said, we can't answer now. We will get answers back to you as quickly as we can. But I, in the spirit of shout outs, I'd really like to thank Alan and his team for being incredibly responsive, informative, and creative in the problem solving that they have undertaken as we try to abide by state statute and be an open, transparent county government, but recognizing we are in urgent times with a very different set of needs.
I have some questions. One of them I think you've taken care of for me, but I'll just play it back to make sure I got it right. So currently with the Washington County Transient Lodging Tax, there is a percentage agreement in place, and a certain percentage of that already goes into the Washington County General Fund. So we have the full flexibility to use that as we've been using it. But what you were referring to in the memo is the possibility of sequestering but looking at the other distribution mechanisms and having those dollars be used instead, for example, with tourism or maybe with city distributions that they possibly be used for COVID-19. Is that something that the state legislature would determine through their concepts?
Chair Harrington, so the legislative concept as written, I have 17 spreadsheets and 3 documents that I'm trying to work from. So as currently drafted, it's going to be a legislative construct. So it has to come through whatever the legislature says because it's a temporary reprieve from statutory authority.
Yeah.
So the legislature at this point, and this may be still in flux, so if things change, we'll keep you in the know, but that the bill will allow net revenue from a TLT imposed or increased by local government to be used for purposes of supporting businesses affected by the coronavirus disease 2019, also known as COVID-19 pandemic. It does not apply to net revenue pledged as security for the repayment of bonded indebtedness by the local government. So basically, it's that net revenue has become much more flexible for purposes of supporting businesses impacted by requirements of the COVID-19. And then that applies to the use of net revenue that occurs on or after March 8th of 2020. So it's time limited as well. So it's the dollars that we collect on the TLT after the crisis was becoming more robust and tourism was slowing down. So, I mean, it's also a diminishing pot, so we have to keep that in mind. Right. So that might have been more of an answer than you wanted. But
no,
Madam,
it was actually very helpful to hear.
We would do definitely need legislative fix. We don't have any discretion on how we divvy that money up. So,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Sorry.
Or deviating from the current allocation.
Right, and there's been, just for information, there's been a number of requests from hoteliers to waive delivering that money to us, and we've informed them that that's not their money, it's the guests' money that they pay to the hoteliers, and that that money is still expected to be paid.
Yep, yep.
Okay. You had more questions?
No. On the budget, I would like to see that we have the budget flexibility, but I'm hopeful through our budget process, and I know we'll talk about this more next Tuesday, April 7th. I don't want to ease up on public transparency and engagement on our budget. But I do understand that other jurisdictions in our state are severely impacted their public engagement, and even getting their budget committee together is severely impacted.
I would like to be clear that those are options that are being provided to the local government to flex things, and I think it's also responsive to the need to maybe not necessarily provide a location in person if that is deemed to be medically unsound advice,
yeah.
But also to be able to perform input opportunities very clearly through written testimony or other means that the county finds that will work. So it's creating that flexibility, not to remove transparency, but to give you the options to respond appropriately.
What I would like to better understand is there are these legislative concepts, but what I And many of them are enabling concepts, right? What I'm trying to understand, and I couldn't quite discern from this latest memo, is what are ones that we absolutely need as opposed to what ones might be helpful towards us. So that's what I'm having a little trouble grasping. And then the third thing that I just wanted to mention is thank you for being flexible to the whole team, because the joint subcommittee is looking at or has looked at all kinds of different wants and needs, and you've been trying to keep up with information as it's been forming, and we know that, or we are fully expecting that there will be at least a one-day special session for all this COVID response. So just keep at it. You're doing a great job, and no matter what happens, we'll catch up with it, and we know we can count on you for bringing us up to speed once all of that activity happens fast and furiously.
Thank you.
We thank you for your leadership and yours as well, Mr. Rhodes, for allowing us to telecommute and maintain a safe workplace so we can be as productive as possible. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. And maybe our CWS associates can get you some of that special hand sanitizer.
Yeah, I think my only comment would be, I think the COVID-19 situation has pointed out to us the value, the benefits of us really building up our government relations staff, and we really have needed you, and doing what we've done in the last year or so to bring all of you on board has been really been a good decision to make.
Commissioner Willie, do you have any questions?
No, not at this time. I think I appreciate the information and certainly the update, because there's a lot of this stuff that goes right on by us or doesn't even come to us. So I appreciate this information, and if I have any questions, I'll certainly reach out.
I just wanted to check for the two commissioners we have on the telephone. Do you have any questions or comments? And I keep pointing to the ceiling.
I like being up there.
Yeah, we are here out there.
Yes.
I do have one really quick point, and that is that I certainly understand for local governments the need to take and look how to address that budgetary issue of meeting in conformance with the local budget law. They're going to have a tough time. Just a thought, though, we also need to be cognizant of our A&T. The reason that all those things were put into place time-wise is so that they could get a tax levy to them soon enough to extend rolls. And so if it's extended, we need to take a good look at what that does to our A&T folks in terms of, are they going to need additional help to hurry up, so to speak, the tax assessment rolls to get those fun little notices out by November. So just another little thing that occurs.
My questions are answered. Thank you.
Great, thank you, and stay healthy. All right, so that's it for the first portion of our work session today. Now we'll take a break and then reconvene after lunch at 1 o'clock, and we'll start with our weekly COVID-19 update. And then we have three other topics on the agenda after that. So we'll look forward to dialing you up again for those of you on the phone. Thank you.
Thank you. See you at 1.
Just an admin note, we'll have the bridge open again 15 minutes before, so you can call in at any point after 12:45.
Thank you.
Thanks.